Hello and welcome back to Chatting Like Champions, episode 15. We finally have our Champions League and Europa League finalists confirmed after some enthralling semi-final performances. Before I bring in my co-pilot, your flight team actually met face-to-face for the first time this week, which just shows, you know, what a crazy year we have all had. How are you, Kieran?
I'm good. Yeah, we were kind of flying the planes remotely, and yep. We finally got to actually get to the controls together. So it was good. But yeah, I'm doing well, and I'm excited to talk about the finalists and what happened in the semi-finals as well.
Yeah, absolutely. We've been kind of just waving to each other from separate terminals and communicating over the tannoys, but we met up finally, and we're hoping that very soon we'll be able to sit in the same kind of studio, same cockpit, and really, you know, produce some more top quality content for you. The thing is, I've currently been in Spain just without the S after Thursday night, but you know, to take my mind off that, let's talk about Chelsea reaching the Champions League final. Yay. Chelsea 2, Real Madrid 0, ended 3-1 on aggregate. The impetus was with Real, who needed to break through the blue wall if they wanted to reach the final. Tuchel's men stood strong and exploited the space in behind time after time. Werner had a goal ruled out for offside, which should have been a massive warning sign to Zidane. His matching up of formations failed in the first leg, and to be honest, it didn't do much better at Stamford Bridge. Kante nicked the ball and threaded in Havertz, who dinked the ball onto the crossbar, and his fellow countryman was there for the tap-in. As expected, Madrid's best chances fell to Benzema, with a right-footed finesse and a header kept out by Edouard Mendy. The first save was you know, a world-class save, I have to say. Havertz also hit the crossbar again with a headed effort just after the break, and Chelsea continued to run riot. And all the nerves were settled when Pulisic came on and assisted Mason Mount towards the end of the game. We will come on to Chelsea in a second, but looking at Real Madrid and Spanish football in general, it has really taken a fall from grace. So when do you think we're going to see a Barcelona or a Real reasserting their dominance, you know, especially without that Super League money that they were kind of really craving for?
That's a really hard question to answer, I think, because obviously both clubs are looking to get stadium renovations done, and obviously Real Madrid's in progress as we speak. That's why they're playing at their training ground. Obviously, once they get them done, that's going to bring in a bit more revenue at games. I've looked at, I've seen some images of both what the concepts of the stadiums are meant to look like, and they look beautiful, not going to lie.
Yeah, they do.
They look really, really good. And obviously, it's not like they're small stadiums to start off with anyway. So once they're done, I think they're expanding it by... I don't think they're expanding the Camp Nou by much, but I think the Bernabeu is getting quite a substantial upgrade, to be honest. I think it's a few thousand. Mm. But that's obviously going to be one source of revenue. I think they're never going to have a problem in terms of marketing and selling merchandise. They're such big clubs, it doesn't really matter too much how they're doing on the pitch. They're always going to bring in, especially with the names they have, along the lines of Messi, who looks to be staying at Barcelona. Haven't really heard any other rumours since, obviously, the presidential election. So it looks like that kind of whole saga's kind of settled a little bit for now. The Super League money would have obviously helped. That's the bottom line. It would have helped them. And I think it's going to be a good 5 years until we really see them back to the standards they were at, I think. Because... They need to, especially Barcelona, but both of them, to be honest, they need to rebuild their squads. Yep. Real Madrid are still relying on the old guard, as we've said in previous episodes, which isn't sustainable anymore, especially at the ages they're getting to. They're, as we've said before, they're all going to retire at once. So Real Madrid really need to get on that squad overhaul, otherwise they're going to be left with a pretty average squad, to be honest, and a group of players that haven't really played together too much. So they need to get that going. And I'll say Barcelona needs to... It's not as big of a job for Barcelona in terms of overhauling their squad, but it still needs to be done a little bit, because obviously something isn't quite clicking. They're playing well at the moment, but obviously they're still failing in Europe, which ultimately is their biggest goal. And they need to be successful in Europe to be considered a successful club. And as you've said, it really has been a fall from grace for most of Spanish football, to be honest.
Yeah. The Spanish title race is really tight. I think on the day we're recording this, in a couple of hours' time, it's going to be Atletico Madrid against Barcelona, which is a crucially big game. We're going to have to watch that and see how that unfolds. But yeah, I think you're right. In terms of Real Madrid, I think they are relying on the old guard on the pitch way too much. And as you said, they're all going to come to kind of start declining at the same time. Whereas with Barcelona, they're now playing a pretty youthful starting 11.
Yeah.
But the older ones are there to kind of complement them. But their problem is that because they've got all these old players, they're just sitting on the wage bill. Like, you've got Coutinho still on the wage bill. Obviously, we did our Barca special and how they're in financial difficulty. So both clubs need to figure out how they're going to sell players and raise funds, because, you know, both teams need squad overhauls. Let's go to Chelsea. Looking ahead to next season, where do you think Chelsea should be finishing in the league? Because I would say they should be rivaling Manchester United for second or third, given their squad depth and the way Tuchel has got them playing. I don't think they'll quite go for the title, but I think they'll be a pretty big thorn in the size of City and possibly Liverpool if they get back to their best.
I think second or third is definitely a realistic ambition for them. Them as a squad and Tuchel's going to be aiming for the title. That, of course they are. Like, they know they have the players realistically that could do it. They've just got to get lucky with City having an off season. If City has an off season like Liverpool has had this season, the Premier League's wide open. Honestly, there's so many teams that could get up there. Of course, I would have said Leicester before their result yesterday. Obviously, losing 4-2 to Newcastle, they still have that kind of bottling mentality to them. They're a little bit Spursy, but I still think that they could do a solid push for the title with the right transfers. But I don't want to speak too much about United, because obviously we'll come on to them a bit more when we're talking about the Europa League. But I think Chelsea definitely has the squad to go for second, and I can genuinely see them finishing there next season. If they get, obviously, everyone says that Werner's had an off season. We've been saying that. Looking at his stats, they're not bad at all for an off season. He's like their top goal scorer, top assister. It's been a good season for him overall. Obviously, he could have had a lot more goals if he didn't miss some of the chances he's had. He's won quite a few penalties as well, which obviously don't go down as assists, but they pretty much are at that point. Mm. I think Tuchel's play style, it's not pretty, but it grinds out results, and that's it's a results business. The Premier League, you can't slip up at all, because it's such a ruthless league usually when we don't have the likes of Pep Guardiola in there. But I think second or third is definitely a realistic finish for them next season. They should definitely be rivaling United. I think in terms of their squads, they're in very similar places. But I think ultimately it depends on whether City have an off season and whether Liverpool can get back into their stride next season. Because once Liverpool's back into their stride, if they keep a hold of the players and make the right transfers coming in, they could easily be challenging for the title again. They've proved that with their squad, that they can go head to head with the City side.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you look at some of the names they're being linked with, I think I'm going to mention them a bit later. But
I think Konate's been, I think that's pretty much come out as like a done deal now, pretty much. I think they have got Konate. Mm. I've read that somewhere. I don't know if that's true or not, but if they've got him, that's another centre-back that they've just added to their long list of centre-backs now.
I think they're being linked to Varane, because he's got a year left on his deal. So, you know, all these massive signings anymore. And, you know, their squad's already just about there, to be honest.
It's going to be a very interesting time next season, because a lot of squads that are in transition, your United's, should realistically have their kind of squads in as a coherent squad by next season, yeah. I'll say. Because what United have been in transition under Ole Gunnar Solskjaer for what, 2-3 years now, haven't they? So I would like to think that next season is the season where everything kind of comes together and they start pushing City a bit more. But as I said, you've got the likes of Leicester. I mean, West Ham have been doing it this season. I don't see him carrying it on. I think this has been a bit of a lucky season for him. Like, obviously, Jesse Lingard seems to have reinvigorated them a bit. But it's the Premier League. There's always outside shouts.
Yes, welcome back to Suitcase of a Superstar. It's my turn this week. And for your first clue, on the list of players with the highest combined transfer fees of all time, this player sits 16th with £111.47 million from 8 separate transfers.
So coming to the Etihad is always a hard task against Pep's men. Coming to the Etihad needing to score 2 goals is near impossible against the City side. This season, City have only had 6 losses in all competitions, which came against Leicester, Tottenham, Manchester United, Leeds, Chelsea and the mighty Tranmere Rovers. Unfortunately, PSG couldn't quite live up to the standards set by Tranmere in this game, as they lost 2-0 to Pep's men. So just minutes after a reverse penalty decision against Zinchenko, City attacked PSG down the left. After a De Bruyne shot was blocked, Mahrez picked up the scraps and fired a shot across goal and put City 1-0 up, which was 3-1 on aggregate. The move all started from a perfect ball from Ederson in the Manchester City goal to pick out Zinchenko as he was running down the left, who fed it to De Bruyne, and it was a playmaker's pass, honestly. It looked like a De Bruyne pass. PSG did try to respond, but to no avail, as there was some fine defending from Ruben Dias and Zinchenko in particular, blocking shots and crosses from all angles from the PSG players. As the second half wore on, it looked as though PSG may at least get one back, until a fine driving run from Phil Foden got the ball up the pitch, who played a 1-2 with De Bruyne, and then he crossed it across the face of goal to the back post where Mahrez was running into it. To pick up his second of the game, which was game over for Poch's men. So, to add salt to the wounds for Pochettino, Angel Di Maria got himself sent off in a stupid scrap with Fernandinho, PSG's 10th red card of the all season. This reveals the kind of mental fragility of this PSG side, as we kind of discussed on our live show. It's a very talented side, but there seems to be a distinct lack of discipline with when the pressure gets to them. So, would you say that Poch needs to kind of overhaul the squad, or can the discipline needed in these big games kind of be drilled into this set of players?
It's a pretty tough one, isn't it? PSG puzzle. It's not really, there's no right answer or one way of doing things there. The thing is, I always feel there's a slight loss of identity whenever they chop and change managers, and that's fine. Like we've seen Chelsea can do that. That's not a problem. But there is always some kind of, there's always a constant underlying identity or set of players that you turn to. So when Tuchel's come in, he can rely on your Azpilicuetas, the kind of players who have been there and done it. Whereas at PSG, it seems like there's always players kind of coming in for a year or a year or two, and then they leave again, or they get phased out the team. It just doesn't seem to be that kind of core, the strong core that a new manager could come in and build around. I mean, the only player I can think of is Marco Verratti, and I think he's been there over a decade. So I think what would be beneficial is for them to try and build around the kind of homegrown talent a little bit more, because they've lost so many players. Like, they've lost Koeman, Kouassi, both of those are at Bayern now. Christopher Nkunku's ripping up at Leipzig, just sold him. There's Yassin Adli, I think he's at Bordeaux. There's Al-Sheesh, I think he's at Saint Etienne. There's all these players. I mean, half the Lille team are PSG graduates, and Lille about to win the league. So I think, they need to build a bit of a core that then allows you to that then allows the star players to flourish, because you don't build a team around star players. Like, you know, as much as, you know, people say you want to buy big superstars, you build it off a solid foundation, and that comes from, you know, defensive partnerships and, you know, things like that. So like Kimpembe is a prime example of them nurturing a talent through their academy, and now he's like starting for France at left centre back. So yeah, it's tough because I don't know what Poch is going to do now, because I mean I'm kind of rooting for Lille to win the title now, and if they win their two games left, they've won the title. So PSG are walking away with one trophy, I think, and I think it's either the Coupe de France or it's like the France Community Shield. So that's a pretty dire return, considering the squad and the money that's been spent. But yeah, I think it's about taking a step back to take two steps forward, I think, for PSG, and not trying to take a really quick step forward with loans like Florenzi and Danilo Pereira, who are, you know, starting games. They need to buy or just give like Colin Dagba the right back slot and play him the whole kind of season, or Mitchell Bakker at left back, or buy somebody, buy a midfielder, you know, things like this. Just kind of build a core that then allows your players like Neymar and Mbappe to flourish, because there's too much of a kind of superstar, superstar overpaid player kind of feel that just doesn't sit right with me whenever I watch PSG. And it showed, didn't it? They literally got exposed, and they lost their heads in that game.
Yeah, there definitely needs to be an overhaul of their kind of recruitment system, because, I mean, another player that I can think of that could be considered part of their core as such is Marquinhos. He's been there for quite a while now. Obviously, he linked up really well with Thiago Silva when he was there, and that was kind of their defensive partnership. Obviously, Thiago Silva's now at Chelsea, so it's a bit of a...
That's an example of, I think, being a little bit stingy there. They think, oh, he's 35, he's 36, we don't need him, we'll play somebody else and we'll buy a younger player. But that's somebody who has, if you can say, they have PSG values in them. They've been playing there a long time. They're a leader. Like, there's no shame in just giving him another year. And even if he doesn't play that many games, he's a strong influence in the dressing room. I mean, at half time, they could have done with a Thiago Silva kind of pep talk to kind of just level their heads. But yeah,
I mean, you don't need to look any further than Chelsea's defence this season to see what kind of impact he's had on a defence that wasn't up to standards as such. So, yeah, I agree with you. They definitely need to overhaul their transfer system. But let's kind of move on to City, where obviously they don't have these defensive problems with Ruben Dias and Zinchenko, who were obviously immense in this game. Dias seemingly is bringing the best out of all of the defence at Manchester City this season. He's only 23 and he's having this kind of effect, which is pretty extraordinary, especially when taking into account the next closest kind of person who had this effect, who I would say is Virgil van Dijk, who is 29, so he's got another 6 years experience on Dias. So would you rate Dias's importance to the City side? I mean, is it comparable to that of Van Dijk's at Liverpool, would you say?
To be honest, I'd probably say no, because I think the way... I'm not taking anything away from Ruben Dias. I think he's been absolutely immense. And, you know, the way he leads and, you know, leads a team in his first season just shows the kind of trust and faith that Pep Guardiola has instilled in him. And he's taken that, you know, grabbed that ball by the horns and just taken it, you know, as far as he can, really. I think the thing is with City is they're defending as a team, right? And PSG didn't defend as a team. And I think you just saw that stark contrast. So Rodri's improved. Fernandinho kind of slots in now. You know, you have Gundogan dropping in as well. Bernardo Silva comes deep to collect the ball. So I think it's a whole team mentality, and it, you know, he's been great, but I think at Liverpool, it was so sorely missed that they didn't have a leader in the back line, and especially if you have fullbacks who like to like keep the width and stay high, then you need somebody who can kind of be very calm and be very sensible in their last ditch tackling if they're left exposed. So yeah, no, I think it's been a brilliant signing, probably signing of the season. And it just shows, if you scout a player, because they scouted him for ages. It wasn't just a season thing. They were like, oh God, we need a centre-back because we didn't replace Kompany. They'd been scouting him for, I think, 3 years or something. So, you know, if you scout a player for that long, then, you know, you can minimise the risk that they are, that they may come with if you hadn't have scouted them properly. So, yeah, a brilliant signing, and, you know, just continues to impress.
I think he's definitely up there for signing of the season, for sure. He's been such an asset to that City side, and he's really shored up that defence, which looked quite fragile, especially towards the end of last season. But another player that, like, you've mentioned them defending as a team, another player that is quite surprising to me is Mahrez. In the first leg, he got back and was one of the furthest people back for City at times. And I remember he put in like a really important block.
Yeah.
And he did like a last ditch tackle. It was like it shows the kind of mentality that Pep's put into these players, which is actually, it's really impressive that you got like your attackers coming back and doing that kind of defensive work, because other wingers as such could be seen as lazy defensively, but they're just not at all. So I mentioned earlier that Chelsea are one of the few teams that City has lost to this season. This kind of feeds in quite well to our kind of preview, which come up after the second clue, obviously. So obviously that loss was in the FA Cup semi-final. It was quite a dire 1-0 win for Tuchel's men. It was a very kind of boring game as such. So do you think this City side looks different, kind of more reinvigorated to the one that faced off against Tuchel's men in the FA Cup? And do you think this will be a different story?
Yeah, it's that was a pretty dire game. I think stylistically, I think when you watch Manchester City and they're not quite on it, it can look very, very lethargic and just like they're running out of ideas. But when they are on it, it looks like, you know, they're passing the ball with ease, and that's what led to the petulance from PSG, because they literally couldn't get the ball off them. So I think it's a shame that Pep didn't manage to kind of get to the FA Cup final, because you would favour them to beat Leicester, and that would have added to what is going to be or could be an absolutely amazing trophy haul for this season. So yeah, I think stylistically there are games where when City aren't on it, it can look a lot worse than it actually is, if that makes sense. And even when they do play well, they're not a team that plays really high. They don't play at 100 miles per hour. They slow it down, and then they have these moments where they pick the locks very carefully, very patiently, very meticulous in their passing, and they will open up a team. So if they fail to be patient and fail to be precise with the ball, then it looks like they are kind of just a bit disinterested, really. But yeah, I think all credit to Tuchel for getting that right. Your second clue is: this player has played for all four clubs in this year's Champions League semi-finals, in no particular order. That is Chelsea, Man City, Real Madrid and PSG. Okay, so we'll come on to the actual Champions League final, Chelsea versus Man City. It is actually Chelsea versus Man City today in the Premier League, which is, should
bit
be
an interesting... Bit of a dress rehearsal.
Yeah, exactly. I don't think... I think Pep's going to be resting a couple of players, but it should be another good watch. So obviously another all English final, Mason Mount and Foden facing off. I've just written here in my notes that I think Pep should buy Callum Robinson and Matias Pereira from West Brom just to make sure they beat Chelsea, because Chelsea don't seem to have a kryptonite, but whenever they come up against West Brom, Callum Robinson just turns into like prime R9 Ronaldo. So that's something for Pep to bear in mind before the final. Obviously, yeah, we just talked about the FA Cup semi-final. I think this game's going to be pretty similar, pretty cagey. I'm so worried that it's all just going to fall into place for Chelsea, because just the way they're playing, they don't capitulate. They stay in games and in knockout competitions. That's just like gold dust to have. Where do you think this one's going? And do you think there are any kind of key battles that will determine the tie?
I think you mentioned like Mount versus Foden. Obviously, that's going to be a very, very interesting kind of matchup, because both English attacking midfielders, obviously both considered to be some of our brightest stars into the future. But another kind of interesting matchup that's going to be taking place in this game is obviously Mahrez and Kante, coming both from that Leicester City side that won the title a few years back. It's going to be very interesting to see that, because obviously they've both been key players throughout this kind of competition for them as well. Kante in the last game was immense. He put in probably one of the best performances I've seen from him, and that's saying something, especially after his performances for Chelsea before and Leicester as well. And then Mahrez, obviously, just he seems to love this competition when he scores. He's picked up three in his last like two games in the competition. That's no easy feat in the Champions League, especially against the kind of caliber of teams that, like, obviously, he was playing PSG in both legs, but it's not like PSG were putting out like weak squads. Not that they would but it's like they're no pushovers. Obviously, not that like City just didn't seem to struggle against them at all, but I think this is going to be a very interesting game. Obviously, I think the game today isn't actually going to tell too much about what's going to happen, because, yeah, as you said, I think Pep's going to rest some players. Not that it seems to make a difference, because when they rest players, their subs bench could go on and win the league anyway. But I think, don't read into the game too much that's happening today, because that's not really going to say too much about what's going to happen in this, because players always play differently in finals. It's just the adrenaline and what's on the line kind of makes them play to another level. And I think this game today won't tell much. And I think that, unfortunately, I think that Chelsea could actually go on and win it, which, oh, no. I know you don't really want that. I don't really want either of these two teams to win, but I mean, I've got to kind of try to back one, which I think, I mean, it's between City winning their first Champions League or Chelsea winning it, which I think I would prefer Chelsea to win it, just because we won't hear the end of it from City fans. But
just a point on that. So it's I don't know. It's quite weird how these things play out. But basically, last night, I basically said to my friend who is a Chelsea fan, he's been giving it to me all week. He's been coming into my room and saying good evening every time he walks past my door. So you know, that it's been a fun week. But we were saying that I hadn't actually seen the Arsenal Barcelona 2006 Champions League final highlights, just because I just never watched them. Like, it was just slightly after I really got into football. I guess nobody really wanted to kind of show me them, because they're not really a fun watch for Arsenal fans. But I watched it and I was there like, I basically watched those last night as if I didn't need to hound myself with any more misery. But I thought I'd pile it on while I'm at my lowest point. In terms of this game, though, yeah, I kind of hope Chelsea don't win it. But I think the inside spaces between the centre-backs and the full-backs are going to be pretty key in terms of City's defensive play, because that's where they got outdone in the FA Cup semi-final, when Werner was occupying that space between, I think it was Cancelo who was playing right-back that day, and probably Diaz or Stones, whoever was on the right-hand side. So, yeah, as we saw, Pep did tinker with his fullbacks. They stayed back in the first half of the PSG game, and then they pushed forward. So that's going to be, I think, quite a key component to how the game kind of plays out. But hopefully we get an exciting final and not like one of these really boring ones like we got between Liverpool and Spurs. You know, let's hope we get something that's a bit you know, has some chances, has some excitement to it.
I don't think it's going to be a high scoring game at all.
No,
I mean both defenses have been arguably the two best defenses in Europe this season. Like ever since Tuchel took over, that is. But it's not going to be high scoring at all. But I think it could go either way. I'm going to back Chelsea, unfortunately. But I'd just rather Chelsea win their fourth, I think it is. Is it?
I think it'd be their second Champions League.
They're second, but then it's their fourth European Cup or something that, isn't it? So second champion. I'd rather Chelsea win their second Champions League than City win their first. It just it just seems to work out better for like neutral fans.
Just a point on Mahrez and Kante. I saw a really good tweet after the Chelsea performance that said Mahrez and Kante were both playing in Ligue 2 when they were 22 and 23, and it was saying that, you know, you never know what a player can become. Like, you can't judge. You know, we want to judge players based off kind of less like a season's performance, and it just goes to show that you know, we're talking about kind of, you know, Haaland and Mbappe's, but there could just be someone who's, you know, chilling in the Championship or chilling in Calcio B or Bundesliga 2 or, you know, somewhere else in Eastern Europe like Dinamo Zagreb. You know, just that it just shows you that there's talent all around, and that's what football's about, isn't it? Someone who's really grinded their way through the leagues, and then, you know, it gives you a good sense of fulfilment when you see them performing right at the top level.
Yeah, kind of adding to that as well. We always, like, the impetus when looking for the next big thing is always on, like, teenagers nowadays. You look at, like, Bellingham's been highlighted as, like, one of England's brightest looking. You look at, I mean, Mount and Foden to an extent as well, when they were, like, obviously in the academies coming through for the first season that they were playing at top level. It's, We put so much impetus on teenagers nowadays. I think players would, like Mahrez and Kante, especially in the English leagues, would have been overlooked, because you don't see City really, like, teams like Manchester City, top teams, going into, say, like the Championship and buying, like, you wouldn't see City go and buy, like, say, Ivan Toney from Brentford, because it just doesn't happen anymore. So I think it's going to be really interesting to see the smaller clubs pick up these players, because that's where they go ultimately. They go to your, like, Brighton's, your Fulham's, Leicester's, like the teams that are considered like mid-table downwards, not Leicester as such, because obviously Leicester are, but you know what I mean, like mid-table downwards. That's where, like, obviously a player that you're linked to, one of my players, but Yves Bissouma came from Ligue 1, he was overlooked by clubs, and now look, he's been linked with Manchester United, Real Madrid, like Arsenal. It's just the journey at the end of the day, and I think that big clubs really need to start reevaluate their stance on players from lower leagues.
Your third clue is this player won two Premier League titles with different clubs, two Champions Leagues with different clubs, an Italian League title, three FA Cups, the 08-09 Premier League Golden Boot, and a European Championship with France.
Okay, so we obviously, there were some other ties that happened, and those were in the Europa League. One,
woo-hoo,
which we're a bit more happy to talk about than the other.
Well, I'm not happy to talk about either, to be honest with you, but...
But one's going to bring back more pain than the other, then.
Yes, and one's going to bring just, I don't know, disgust. But
okay, let's talk about the one that brings Would you say this one brings disgust, the first one on the list? Yeah. Disgust then. So, Roma 3, Manchester United 2, but obviously it was 5-8 on aggregate, one of the highest scoring games across two legs in the Europa League history, I think. I should probably look that up before I say that, but I'm guessing so. That's 13 goals across two legs. Like, that's ridiculous. Obviously, in this game, though, Cavani got a brace. But United did appear to show cracks after half-time when both fullbacks were changed. Obviously, Alex Telles and Brandon Williams came on. And they just seemed to look a bit all over the place. And that's how Roma clawed back two goals. But the win for Roma kind of gave them some pride as they obviously exit the tournament on quite a... Is it an impressive scoreline? I think it is. The other big thing is that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has finally got past the semi-final. Like, he can no longer be hounded for that. But the other result, which was another dire game, Arsenal 0, Villarreal 0, which ended 2-1 to Villarreal on aggregate. So there was only one shot all game for Arsenal, which...
Well, yeah, one shot on target, yeah.
One shot on target, which kind of, like, sums up the performance, I suppose. I mean, you're going to touch on this game a bit more in the next section, so we won't go into too much detail about it. But let's kind of preview the final, shall we? Which I'm sure you're extremely excited to talk about. So this is Manchester United's first major final in 3 years. Their strikers finally scoring goals, and Pogba's playing well. I mean, that's the three major problems they've been facing on the field over the past few years. And they've all been addressed under the management of an apparent PE teacher. So surely Ole Gunnar Solskjaer has won that Lampard-Arteta-Ole Gunnar Solskjaer debate now, surely. I mean, what's your take on that?
Yeah, thanks for putting this. I didn't even know you'd put this in, but no, you sneaked it in, and you've ambushed me. Right. Well, sorry. Just a point on Cavani. Just I know I'm going back a bit here, but that's PSG could have done with him. No.
Yeah.
No, like, giving him an extra year or a deal. There's no need to. This is another thing. They thought, oh, he's a bit old, we'll get rid of him. And then they go and spend 50 million on Icardi and they don't want him anymore. So, you know, it's a... if Ollie can get him to sign another... They need to keep him, basically.
I think it's pretty much been confirmed that he is signing another deal. I think the Glazers have kind of moved heaven and earth to try and appease the United fans.
Mm.
So I'm pretty sure that he is signing a new deal. And that he said that he's happy at United, whereas his father obviously wants him to go to Boca Juniors because he wants him to go to South America. But let's not avoid the question.
Oh, all right. Yeah. So just thought I'd put that in. Okay, fine. Right, the question. Okay. Well, yeah. I mean, I can't really speak much. I say, yeah. Obviously, he's winning it at the moment, but there's always time. Like, If he doesn't win this competition, if he doesn't win the final, that's questions to be asked, I think. You know, a club like Manchester United needs to be winning trophies. And, you know, they went out in the Champions League at the group stage when they kind of... It was in their destiny. They weren't relying on anybody else to kind of, you know, make up points or drop points. They should have gone through. He can take the win for now. But there's always time. He's winning it at the moment. That's my answer.
Okay, so actually previewing the game now. This tie will be a great opportunity for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer to get his hands on his first piece of silverware for under his tenure at United. This will be their first if they win it since this very same trophy in the 16-17 season. I mean, Villarreal didn't exactly inspire confidence against a very average Arsenal side, which I think you can agree with me there, in a game where they possibly should have seized more control and taken advantage a bit more than they did. I think we can kind of expect Cavani to keep up his goal scoring form and continue to be United's like talisman, because he's been very good for them. I think he's surpassed a lot of people's expectations, and he's shown that goal scoring instinct can be converted between any league. It doesn't matter what league you're going to. Mm. It can be done anywhere. So it may not be the European trophy they wanted at the start of the season, but I don't think any of the players will want to pass this opportunity up. So let's talk a bit about Villarreal. Unai Emery is somewhat of a specialist at winning this trophy. Obviously, he won it 3 times in a row with Sevilla at one point. So how much of a chance do you give this Villarreal side against this United side? And I suppose, let's get our predictions out there. What are you saying that will happen in this final?
Well, I mean, it's kind of pick your poison, isn't it? I either have Arsenal's former manager win it and then everybody be like, oh, Emery won it, and blah, blah, blah. Or have my arch rivals in Manchester United win it. So the thing is, Manchester United on paper should blitz the Villarreal team if they're on it. But the problem is I don't know what Manchester United will turn up. As we've seen, they can kind of get cold feet in semi-finals, and they've got past that now. But this is a big opportunity to put that to bed again and win a trophy. But, you know, Emery's kind of just has a knack of doing it in this competition, a knack of staying in the games. If he can kind of stop Manchester United playing the fast attacking football and keep them fairly contained, then yeah, all it takes is a bit of magic. It's a final, it's a one-off game. So I'm kind of hoping Villarreal win it just so Manchester United don't, but it's not really pleasing either way.
No, I mean, as an Arsenal fan, as you said, it's a bit like pick your poison. You're not going to be happy either way. Obviously, yeah, it is a one-off game, and it depends on what United show up, as you said. But I genuinely think that this United side should be winning this. They really should. But the players they have in that squad, if they don't, that's going down as a massive failure this season. Yeah. So I'm going to obviously predict a United win here. Although I think it'd be important not to underestimate Emery in this tournament, because he's shown that he can do it with, like, this Villarreal side is very similar to that Sevilla side that he won it 3 times in a row with.
I'd say it's probably marginally worse, but yeah.
But he's shown that he can do it with this kind of squad, and I think that you can't underestimate that. He knows how to win this trophy, so that's obviously always invaluable to the team that he's managing. But I suppose coming on to United a little bit more then, because I'm sure you love talking about them. Can this United side finally start being considered a Champions League team next season if they keep hold of players such as Pogba, Cavani, etc.? Because they haven't really, even though they got into the competition, they haven't really been considered a Champions League side. People have said that they kind of fluke their way into the top four, stuff like that. Mm. Would you say that they, next season, they're considered a top four team?
I think we could say they're a top four team. Yeah, I think we can. But I don't know if you can call them I think there's a difference between a top four team
and a Champions League team, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I think they need to progress through the group stage and put up a couple, you know, big results and put down a couple markers in next season's Champions League. And I think next season is pretty huge for Manchester United, because they either need to go and buy a striker if Cavani's not going to stay, or they need to go and buy somebody like Jadon Sancho, because this is kind of like, you've got a lot of players in their prime now, and if you're keeping Cavani, it's probably his last year of elite, you know, scoring. You might have a couple more after that, but yeah, I think next season they need to be looking at the really big honours, like the major honour, like the Premier League, like the Champions League, try and get, you know, really far, and, you know, kind of tell Europe that Manchester United are back to a certain extent. Because if they do kind of go out of the Champions League again at the group stage or at the round of 16 to what should be a team, you know, they should be beating, then, you know, I'm just kind of thinking what more can they do? But they need to find the extra gear, and I think it's a mental gear. I don't think it's anything quality wise as much as they do need somebody like a Sancho. I think it's a mental battle that they've got to get through, as they have done getting through a semi-final for the first time. So yeah, I think they could be considered a top four team, but a Champions League team, I think we'll have to kind of come back to that question next season.
People are putting impetus on, obviously, that Sancho transfer and have been doing so for a while. I think it's important not to overlook the likes of like Mason Greenwood, especially now that Cavani seems to have taken him under his wing. There was a little bit of a scrap in the game against Roma, and Cavani was the first one to run over and pretty much defend Greenwood. So it looks like that there's like a good kind of camaraderie there. So I think that Greenwood's only going to flourish when he's around that kind of attacking kind of talent, especially someone that's as experienced as Cavani is. But I suppose it'd be interesting to see what actually happens this summer.
Your fourth clue is this player had a documentary on Netflix called Misunderstood that released last year. Now, we're going to get to, you know, the crux of the episode, as if I haven't enjoyed this episode too much already. You know, I've been kind of sat here in my uni room, absolutely, you know, absolutely thrilled from what we've been talking about. But we'll get on to we need to talk about Arsenal. And I do have to plug the Mahel Khan episode. So if you haven't listened to that, make sure you go and listen to that. It was a bit of a kind of Emery versus Arteta before any of the Villarreal Arsenal ties actually took place. I do have to say, though, some of the tweets he's been putting out, I've been slightly infuriated by them. There was one on Thursday night, and I was like, I really wanted to tweet him back, and I was like, no, I really shouldn't. This is not what, I'm not in the right frame of mind to do this. But I've got a couple points here I'm just going to run through, and then I'll bring Kieran in. But I think the problems run far deeper than the manager and the players. The Kroenke's style of ownership has absolutely crippled the club, like, on the pitch. We moved to a shiny new stadium for what? Like, we're now going to be out of Europe most likely next season. So that's just to bring in more, get more people through the turnstiles. That's all it is. No investment. But most of all, there's no care or communication that would benefit, you know, would be for the good of the club. If you care about how your club's run, I'm not saying you have to put loads of money in, but at least take some care in who you're hiring to run your club, so then it sustains success, right? Like, Roman Abramovich has got Marina Granovskaya running his club because he knows, she knows what she's doing, and, you know, she's been delivering. If you hire rookies, or you hire CEOs and different ones, we've had so much instability over the last few years. Gazidis hired Emery and then went off to AC Milan. Then we had Raul Sanlehi. We had Sven Mislintat as our kind of head scout. He then left. So it's just been instability. And now they've hired, what are rookies, to be honest? Edu hasn't done this role at a top club. He did it at the Brazilian national team. That's a whole different role. Vinay is the, I can't remember what his official title is, but he's the one who represents Arsenal on like the ECA and things like that. So you probably would have heard his name going around when the Super League stuff was about. And Arsene Wenger worked miracles, and they used him as a shield, to be honest, hanging him out to dry, which, looking back on it, I think is, I just, I'm so disgusted that they did that to such a kind of special man for our club. They basically said, yeah, you know, he's the one kind of not really getting us anywhere. And now Wenger's left and they've been exposed. So you either sell up the club with the Spotify owner now kind of pushing, or you invest money into the club because we're falling behind, and otherwise we will become a mid-table club. The argument I do find most infuriating is the one that is the narrative that Chelsea sacked their manager and brought in somebody more experienced, so Arsenal should do the same. The difference is Chelsea are one of the best run clubs in Europe and Arsenal have been one of the worst run clubs in the same period. Yes, a more experienced manager might find some quick fixes, but to get this team performing at an improved level, to get this team performing at a level where they can challenge the likes of Chelsea, Manchester United, and challenge for Premier League titles and Champions League, become a Champions League club. I don't want to get a manager in who might get us into, might scrape us into fourth. You know, that's not what this club needs. It needs a proper rebuild. So, you know, and if you look at Chelsea's team, it's constantly improved every summer, which is why Tuchel has so many options. I mean, he can leave out Hakim Ziyech, he can leave out Pulisic on the bench, and he's still got, you know, Hudson-Odoi hasn't played, Tammy Abraham's not even been in the squad. They'll probably make 30, 40 million pounds off of him. Yeah, and if anyone thought they were done there, they're linked with players like Haaland and Lukaku, which just shows their, you know, utmost ambition and ruthlessness. I mean, you can call me deluded if you want, but I am still with Arteta, as crazy as it might sound. It has been an abysmal season. I can't brush over that. But for me, it feels like this is a crucial tipping point in the cycle, because we could either go one of two ways. We could either go downwards and keep going, keep chopping and try and change manager and chop and change and it not really work. With a mixed transfer policy that then leads to us basically becoming a mid-table club. And I'm going to draw us to the Pochettino example. I know Pochettino is a vastly more experienced manager and, you know, has managed many more games at, you know, the highest level. But there was that point at Spurs where they sacked him. And there's now been this revisionism where you look back on it and think, if they just stuck with him until the end of that season, got to the summer and kind of revamped the squad, who knows what could have happened? Because now they've sacked Jose Mourinho and they're literally back to square one. They're not even back to square one. They're back to kind of a state that is before Pochettino, where Pochettino got them to. So in that sense, I feel like I would like to see Arteta just have one more season with a proper transfer window, with proper backing. We've got a core of under 23 players who are for the future and need to be built around. So we need senior players and, you know, big signings. And I know it's going to be hard without Champions League football, but the owners are going to have to do that because they haven't put any money in before, haven't taken care in how the club's been run. Unai Emery, there's another point, was sacked for less. Yes, I understand. But with Unai Emery, towards the end, there didn't seem to be a plan, if that makes sense. It was we were outperforming our XG massively, thanks to Lacazette and Aubameyang's finishing and form. And with Arteta, it feels like there's a plan, but it's not being executed properly. And that's ultimately his job to fix. I accept that. And for me, it's a balance that the club as a whole needs to execute. We need a combination of better players so we can play better football, but there also needs to be impetus for Arteta to simplify some of the tactics to get results in the short term. So both parties have got to work together in that sense. Otherwise, it will break down and he'll probably have to leave next season, because there's no sounds that he's going to be sacked. And I don't see a man. This is why I'm going to bring you Kieran in. I don't see a manager out there who is kind of capable of bringing in, of building it, building a team that can challenge for the league. As I said, I don't want a mediocre manager who might kind of improve us in the short term. This squad needs proper rebuilding. So I'd give Arteta another season with new players, because if a new manager does come in this time next year, we'll be saying it's his first season, so we have to kind of, like, you know, give him a free pass basically, and then we have to question, have we made any progress or not? I mean, Kieran, the only manager I've been thinking about and I may be open to is Christophe Galtier. I've kind of turned into a bit of a Lille fan over the past couple of weeks. I even looked at buying a kit recently. I need to get one. So, but he's worked. We've kind of got a great relationship with Lille in terms of buying players, Pepe, Gabriel. We linked it to some more. So he builds a team around young players and complements them with older players. Look at Burak Yilmaz, 35, scored a brace yesterday, 15 goals in Ligue 1. So yeah, but apart from that, I have concerns about other managers that are being tipped around. So I mean, do you want to give me some names and I'll kind of tell you my opinions on them?
Okay, so I'm just trying to think of the managers that are out of work at the moment. Obviously, you have Max Allegri is probably the biggest name I can think of out of work at the moment. So, I mean, he did well at Juve, and he's arguably one of the best managers out there at the moment that are out of work. So, yeah. would you take him at Arsenal?
No, I honestly wouldn't. I'm not doubting his ability, because I think he's a great manager. But in terms of where we are, he didn't build a squad. What he did was take a very kind of aging squad with a squad that had players in its prime, and got constant success of that out of it. Especially, you know, domestically, I know they didn't win the Champions League under him, but in terms of taking a young team that needs to be kind of nurtured and built up, I don't honestly think that's his skill set. And if that goes down the sink, it's a very expensive mistake, because he'll be a very expensive manager to hire, and he'll want a lot of other signings. In terms of other names, you've got, I mean, like,
yeah, I've got
Rodgers.
I've got a few here.
Yeah, go on.
That you could call like A-list managers, as such, so managers that have kind of managed teams in the top five leagues across Europe, as such. So you've got Lucien Favre, obviously ex Dortmund manager. I wouldn't take him at Arsenal if I was an Arsenal fan. I don't think. He seemed to fall apart a little bit at Dortmund towards the end of his tenure.
Yeah, he's not elite manager, is he? That's kind of a
no. You got Sarri. Obviously, he's a good manager. There's no taking that away from him. Mm-hmm. Like, he is a very good manager, and I think he's a bit unfairly treated at some of the clubs he's been at. But I mean, obviously, he's an ex-Chelsea manager. I don't know whether he's a bit of a short-term fix, in my opinion.
Yeah.
He doesn't seem to really be a project manager. He seems to be able to go to a team, fix it within a season or two, and then he kind of doesn't really know where to go from there.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm gonna leave one of them till last. So you have Ernesto Valverde.
Yeah, not bad. Not bad.
And I mean, this one's definitely a no from me, Frank Lampard.
Well, no, I don't think even he'd say yes, so
but
no.
I mean, Patrick Vieira, obviously Arsenal legend. He got seventh in Ligue 1, if I'm correct.
I think so.
I think it was with Nice, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And it's not bad for seeing that he's quite unexperienced in that line of work. Getting seventh in Ligue 1 isn't really a bad feat as such. But obviously, he's got kind of that. He kind of has that resonance with the fans as well. Obviously, being an Arsenal legend. I think, I don't know, what's your take on Vieira?
The thing I'd say about Vieira is, firstly, he's, what more has he got on his CV apart from a full season than Arteta?
True.
Arteta is basically the candidate who fills the boxes about being linked with the club, being linked with the fans. And Patrick Vieira is very inexperienced. I wouldn't take him, honestly. I think so. It's hard. I'm willing to give Arteta until next season to see what he can do, because I really do believe there's stylistic things there that I just can't bring myself to lose. There's just things that I'm looking at and I'm thinking, I can really see this working. And I know we're in ninth, and I know we're out of Europe, but who knows what a season without European football could do? We know, like, you know, we've seen what Chelsea can do without European football. We could easily push for top four if there's a good summer and we don't have to play midweek games. So, you know, it's all open. It's all open to it, isn't it? Your fifth and final clue is, this player was developed by Arsene Wenger, replaced Ian Wright in the team, and was then sold on for big money. Oh, and a certain someone who who is now in the Premier League Hall of Fame, was signed as his replacement. So, Kieran, clues, and have you got it?
Yeah,
I saw you were struggling slightly towards clue.
Up until the fourth clue, I had no idea. That Netflix clue gave it away.
Okay,
but that's someone that replaced him is Thierry Henry.
Yep.
And the player is obviously Anelka.
Yeah.
His first name eludes me.
Nicholas Anelka.
But yeah, it's a bit of an out there player compared to the ones we've had, isn't it?
I was trying to think of something like slightly topical, and I thought he's actually played for all of the Champions League teams. So I was like, why not?
Yeah, no, it's a good one. Got me thinking.
Yes, yeah.
I'm not really too up to scratch with like ex-Arsenal players like that, like you are. So
yeah, he's a bit of a journeyman, and I thought I'm able to get my Arsenal glory days into the clue. So why not?
Just to make you feel a little bit better.
Yeah, just a bit. our next episode will be us compiling URN Sport's greatest European footballing memory. So make sure to stay tuned for that. I have been assigned a challenge by our fellow podcaster Dom Allen. He's challenged me to recreate the Gary Neville moment when Fernando Torres scored. So if you want to hear my recreation of that, I'm going to be trying to execute that in the next episode. Make sure to follow us at Champions URN on Twitter and Instagram. Thank you for Kieran for you know, joining me as usual. And thank you to you for choosing to fly with Chatting Like Champions. And we hope to see you again very soon. Goodbye.